Greetings, friends, and welcome to another season of the GrogPod Roguelike Podcast, where each episode we wake up in a pool of video game blood, try to escape its addictive clutches, and then rate it against the pantheon of other godlike roguelikes that we've covered for the year. I am your grumpy administrative lord of the podcast, Scott Berger, and with me are my fellow Underworld co-hosts.
Oh, it's Colin, the spindly skeleton who tells you how to use your podcast skills for good.
And this is Will, the best boon you could possibly get.
And lastly, it's Andrew Harshman, one of many screaming, screeching, eternally burning souls roiling in the depths of the Stygian River.
And if you are listening to this without looking at the title, we are playing this week the Darren Korb Simulator Hades, released in early access December 6th, 2018. I think maybe as a launch title for the Epic Games Store, but wind up coming to Steam the following year, 2019, and then 1.0 to September 17th, 2020. Hades is, as you can expect, a find it anywhere kind of game, PC, Mac, Switch, PlayStation, Xbox, iOS even. This was made, developed, and published by a little known game developer, Supergiant Games, who have made such previous hits, such as 2011's Bastion, 2014's Transistor, 2017's Pyre? Collins played that one at least. 2020 with Hades, and breaking their one game every 3 years rule, 2024 with Hades 2 in early access. And I think should be knock on wood, 1.0ing this year, 2025, at some point. So we maybe for the future, we'll see what the schedule holds. Hades 1, in any case, rolls in on our popularity charts at the number 6 most popular rogue game on Steam with 273,557 total reviews. Your average player of Hades has about 66 hours in it. But, Will, your pact of punishment this episode is to describe what one does in Hades in one sentence.
One sentence. All right, let's see here. I don't have anything prepared. Let's see. Hades is an extremely finished, unique, the first of its kind narrative-driven bullet hell featuring the epic escape of Zagreus, son of Hades, from the depths of hell. Sounds about right, right?
Yeah, I mean, that sounds about right.
But yeah, that's basically what's happening.
Yeah, my eyebrows were flying off my head when you suggested Hades. Not because I knew that you had rated this game highly in the past, but I think, the first thing that came to mind for me was, but this is a bullet hell game, right? Question mark?
I mean, that's true. But here's the thing about it, though. all the padding around the bullet hell is so well done that even I can tolerate the bullet hell nature of it. I don't enjoy it, don't get me wrong, but that's not going to prevent me from giving this a very, very high rating. I notice at the end of the little combat sessions, and we'll get into like how this all works, but like my calves will be tensed and I'll be like, oh, that's annoying. I was just feeling stress. Why am I continuing on? And then I'm like, oh, because I want to know what happens next. I so want to know what happens when I finally get out. What happens, you know, how does the story develop with this character, with that character? Can I get to the next unlock? Maybe this build is better. And all this energy finding and all the understanding of the small dynamics, all that, those juicy details come together to really make this game, in my opinion, a very good game.
I'm also going to posit that this is not a true bullet hell. I think it's a bullet hell light. I think there's you look at real traditional bullet hell games where you're a spaceship flying around and there's a gazillion little bullets on screen. I don't think Hades plays like that. I think the bullets aren't in weird patterns enough to trigger my dislike, which is, that's really what I hate about bullet hells, is when you're in, there's like the various spirals that are intersecting, mm-hmm. and you have to go and move yourself to the one pixel and then slightly 2 pixels south, and then so you're staying in the cross section of where like the interference pattern of bullets.
It's like a very stressful maze navigation.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, y'all are right. This is not a bullet hell. It's infinitely more aggravating.
You punch stuff with your fists. How many bullet hells can you punch things with your fists?
Yeah, the combat is great. I mean, obviously there's parts of the boss fights where, yep, there's a lot of projectiles on screen. Sometimes they're even in a pretty pattern, and you are indeed having to dodge them in literal hell, the setting of the game. But the bulk of the combat is a little more kind of Souls-like, isometric, maybe Path of Exile 2 sort of like. It's fairly unique. I feel like it pretty successfully merges gameplay from a number of other games into something that isn't 100% or even 75% appealing to me. But something that is, I think, fairly successful and obviously pretty popular for a lot of people.
Yeah, on the rankings Google sheet, for our end of season forced categories that I begrudgingly shove everything into together. Right now I have Hades listed as a quote top-down shooter, which is technically not correct.
That's completely incorrect.
But I don't know what else to put it
it's,
in.
It's tough to categorize it. I would say it's more of a, I don't know.
Not a platformer.
The bullet hell.
A dating sim where to like get to the meaningful story segments, which are of arguable quality. Y'all seem to like them a lot. Did I beat the game?
Your quality comments are completely...
Do we want to get into this now, or?
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, like you're trying to evaluate the whole thing, but by
I can give my opinion on the quality of the writing.
You can't. It's just been invalidated.
All right, but before we do that, before we jump into that, I think it's worth pointing out that Hades has a big following. It's one of like the top 10 most popular ones.
I'm frankly shocked that it's only number 6 in this.
Yeah, I would have guessed like top situation. Three.
Well,
yeah,
easily. I guess.
What are the other 5?
You know, I knew this was going to come back to bite me.
Oh, I don't know if we want to spoil all of them, but like, yeah,
no,
what is considered to be
spoil
higher?
Me.
What's number 5?
Okay.
At the very least, please.
And do keep in mind, like, if you are listening to these episodes sequentially and you hear me say that like another game is also number 6 from like a year ago. It's because I update the data quarterly, so like these numbers can shift around a little bit. Yeah.
You don't go back to previous episodes and edit in their current ranking.
Yeah, I was about to call you out on that one. Good thing you made that caveat. Otherwise, you know, it would have been catastrophic.
Oh yeah, on your case.
Okay, so this is how much we're gonna stir the pot here a little bit. So I claim that Hades is number 6 on the list. Now the list also includes games that have. That are tagged procedural generation and permadeath, but not explicitly roguelike. So when I go through this list, you'll be like, oh, okay, that's how you get that number. So Hades number 6 is preceded in ranking by Risk of Rain number 2, number 5, Binding of Isaac
Accurate.
Rebirth number 4,
okay,
Deep Rock Galactic, which technically is tagged. It's technically tagged.
Yeah, no,
roguelike.
Yeah,
technically.
I see
better shooting
on the list, and I see how it's ahead of it. Yeah.
Yep. One that, you know, write in, send us your hate mail, grogpodzone@gmail.com. Lethal Company, number 2
what
on
the
this
fuck?
List.
That's awesome.
Because that is, yeah. It is tagged procedural generation and permadeath.
But it's not a fun game. Oh my God.
Well,
do we have any?
Whether or not it's fun is not that's not what these criteria are measuring. This is measuring sales.
Right.
We all played Lethal Company.
Do we have any guess as to what number 1 is? I don't think you're going to get it.
Well, we're not going to get it, so go ahead and tell us.
Yeah, no.
Okay. So
I don't know. No
now
guess.
Again, caveat. This is like games that are tagged with any kind of rogue thing in any capacity. So if it has 1 out of 5,000 tags applied, it still counts. Number
Gary's
1 on this list is
Minecraft.
Don't Starve Together.
Oh, interesting.
That's a good game. Okay.
It's not like outrageous. I like how we all kind of go, oh yeah, okay, I can see that.
Okay.
Interesting.
It stretches. Is it roguelike? Kind of.
I mean, back to the matter at hand.
Yeah, the point is,
on this list. So anyway,
Hades won, wildly popular.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just so popular.
Yeah.
And so one of the questions that I wanted us to kind of revisit for this was that, like, yeah, we've all kind of like put some time into Hades in some capacity over the years. I think like the last time I played this game before we picked Will picked it for the pod was like 4 years ago or some long amount of time.
2020
I'm like,
for me.
Yep.
Like, I would be interested to come back to play this. And so like 4 years later, despite the number of hours that we put into it, like, does this still feel fun to come back to? Because I think the Will shaking his head. I think
that might have been sarcastic. Unclear.
Like, no, the uniqueness of this, where it's not so much pick up and play with like everything fresh, like you would expect from like a true asterisk roguelike game. It does offer like a very unique perspective on that. So, bullet point here: Hades in 2024, still worth it? Question mark.
If you've never played it,
yeah. Absolutely. If you've never played it, absolutely.
That's the thing. It's coming back to. I mean, at some point, I think I nearly 100%. I don't know. I have it looks like 101 hours into it, and I played 6 hours for this podcast. But like everything else was in the prior runs, and like, yep, that was super fun experience. It looks like I rated it initially at a certain value. We'll get into it, but like, if I was gonna rate it again, it's gonna be like down a full point. I'm gonna give it its original value because that's really, I think, more relevant here. But yeah, coming back to it, once you have completed the narrative and you have all the story and all the unlocks, it's like, what's there? I'm really there for the unlocks and the completionist sort of like perspective. I don't care about the bullet hell bullshit. I don't want to do that mindless clicking to avoid things. And yeah, that's not my style.
I think that it is still fun to come back to. I think that coming back, I played like one or two runs without starting a fresh save, and those were not as good. And then I started a fresh set because I was bad at it because I don't remember how to play. I don't remember any of the synergies, etc. Like vague memories, but not, I wasn't fresh. Starting a fresh save file was more fun. You got the, like, I think that Hades gets a lot of mileage out of meta progression. It is pretty light on the rogue light scale. It's very difficult to win on your first run. I don't think it's really possible for someone who's not an expert at Hades. I think I made the comment to the guys that the first two runs before you get some of the upgrades don't even really feel like the game. It feels like an extended intro. Mm-hmm. You don't get the double dash until you get a couple of like the meta currency, which vastly changes how you play the game. You don't get the one like respawn life death defiance thing, and then you, yeah, so like you, basically the game starts on your third run, and it really does lean heavily on the unlocks, meta progression, meta currency, story unlocks, random gear for your house kind of feel, which definitely pushes it away from a true traditional roguelike. But I think it does that part of it really well. Even, I mean, I think maybe for me more so than you guys, but I thought it still hit the second time around for me.
I think when I booted up a fresh file, because my save file had like 80 hours in it or something, I'm like, let's see what this feels like from a fresh experience, because it's been a while. Boot it up, and yeah, you just get like bludgeoned in your first like couple rooms, and then like because you have to start that loop over. And I was like, well, okay, this is just like starting the big expansive story all over again. And I don't know, like, I kind of don't want to restart the story. I want to see where the story's going. Like, for me, it didn't hit so well from a fresh file. I definitely didn't toggle the hell mode on that test file. But really, real quick, Woody, frequent guest on the show, has written in about his Hades experience, saying, Real quick here. I think Hades is great. I played through it to the end. I thought it had a very good feel. One thing I think it's interesting about it, its place in the roguelike games, one thing I think that's interesting about it is its place in the genre of roguelike games, because I can't imagine beating it on a player's very first run. It seems like the buffs it gives you over time are designed so that most people will start beating the runs right around the same time they're approaching the last bit of the character's relationships. It's a great balance of narrative and gameplay system that unlocks at the same time. With that said, I think the emphasis on the narrative means once I feel like I've seen the whole story, I'm not interested in playing through it again. That's not a bad thing, just something that differentiates it from a more, quote, pure roguelike experience.
Woody, you're a genius. If you're listening to this, you know, brilliantly broken down there.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with most of that assessment. But there are many games that I like a lot that I only played one time.
Yeah, and I don't think
also,
it's...
Also, there's many roguelike games where I played a bunch of runs and then never played again.
Yeah.
So I'm going to interject, not with my own opinion, but with an opinion of a good friend of mine who I scheduled time to talk to. I said, I need to talk to you on the phone about Hades. I need to talk to you about the end
talk
game.
About hell.
And by end game, I mean like after you have beaten Hades the first time. And I need to talk to you about the heat system, because I am not enjoying it. I don't like it. I don't get it. What are they trying to do design wise? And my friend who has nearly 900 hours in this game, close to 900 hours, explained to me that, in his opinion, he had a lot of things to say about the heat system, but one of the great takeaways for me in the conversation was he said, hey, the heat system allows you to customize your experience, allows you to customize the difficulty. Mm-hmm. And that system has kept him coming back and keeping the game fresh and like being able to fine tune like what his experience is going to be like and trying out different builds, trying out different weapons, you know, all this stuff has kept it fresh for him. And to be clear, like the reason he has so many hours in it is that like Hades is his go-to like zone out and listen to a podcast like game, right? It's like a gaming activity that can be coupled with other activities. So it's not as if like he's just repeating the story over and over again because he likes it so much. And so I think there are some players who do get value out of continuing to play the game past the point that you've consumed the core story content. Mm-hmm. What it sounds like, based on the votes that we are gathering today from Woody and from y'all on the show right now, that maybe my friend is in the minority. But there's some players where there's value to be had in replaying it.
I talked with my sister, and she's played many hours of Hades, and she's not normally the kind of person who plays roguelikes at all, or really even, she's definitely more of a story-driven player. So for her to be really into this game was interesting, and she said that the story was what hooked her, but then once she got good enough at it, she really enjoyed the flow state that she would get into once she knew everything and didn't have to think too hard. And you know, she had the same kind of feeling where she'd just go and listen to music and play or be like half doing something and play like a run and then go to bed. So kind of the way that Will approaches Slay the Spire, I think, where you're not super super focused, but you're just enjoying the act of playing rather than some of the more you're not like trying to beat it or trying to optimize. You're just enjoying the act of playing.
It's probably worth pointing out a kind of hidden away sub mode that called God mode, appropriately enough, that allows you to, it starts with like 20% base like global damage resistance, and then it ups it by 2% each time that you die up to a maximum of 80%. So like if you were someone who was just like, yeah, like I don't really care so much about like trying to quote get good at the game, and I am just here for like the dating sim, like cool art story stuff, like find the God mode, tip that box, and just like kick back and relax with your favorite episode of the Grogpod Roguelike podcast.
Maybe listen to the Bellatro episode for a sixth time.
And I think like, yeah, like I could 100% seeing that as like the total zone out experience. But Will, it looked like you were about to say something.
No, just simply that, yeah, I'm aware of this God mode feature, but only because I've got a friend, Janet, that she's let's just say not a gamer. She's not a pro gamer like us. And so I guess if you just die enough times in a row and you just don't get very far, it suggests it to you. Like, hey, do you think you might need a little help here?
The real question is, who suggests it to you? Is it a character in the game?
I think it's just a menu pop-up, right?
I think it's a character. That would be awesome.
Skelly the Friendly Skeleton would be pretty awesome if that was how it...
Hey, boy, I couldn't help but notice you're terrible at this game.
But I just want to
have some trouble.
This mechanic, though, is it's beautifully done because it both on the heat side and on the God mode side, if we recall, what we want to do is on the x-axis of the level of difficulty and the y-axis of level of ability, you want to make sure that you are in that channel that's right in the middle, extending from the origin. And so if you really suck and your ability is low, then basically it just goes ahead and it automatic, you know, with God mode, it makes it so that the difficulty.
God mode is cold mode. It's the anti-heat.
yeah, exactly. That's another way of thinking about it. But I think it's great because no matter what level of proficiency you have with these kind of games, me, of course, I checked the hell mode because I am a god of these kind of games. And so, you know. But you know, for those of us who are not so advantaged, you're gonna have fun regardless.
So I was told by a previous guest and friend of the show, Helen, that if you weren't playing on hell mode, you were playing baby mode, and that the real game is hell mode and you better get after it. And I was like, all right, I'll try that. I did not get around to trying it out.
See, like I toggled the hell mode option because I was like, okay, fresh file. Let's see what this is all about.
Check it out.
And like, it basically just starts a fresh file with the Pact of Punishment enabled, with like a small amount of like the heat gauge already started. And I just thought like, oh, like this might be an interesting way to be like, yeah, I've beaten like the whole story. I just want to start a fresh file. And like, I thought it was going to have everything unlocked and just like go straight into Pact of Punishment speedrunning mode. But no, it's very much like, hey, you know that 100-hour story? You're going to have to climb that mountain again. And not that that's, well, I don't know that if that's a good or bad thing, but like, I was almost expecting hell mode to just be like a, like, unlock everything. This is just the speedrun mode.
Right.
Just shortcut to it. Because I feel
I get you. Yeah, why isn't it just called hard mode? Like any other game. So it's like, it's hell mode. Kind of implies that it's something more specific. Interesting. Hey, speaking of that 100-hour story mountain,
what is the
story?
This is our timestamp in the description. Boom. Story begins.
Spoilers.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess like
actual spoilers though. Like unlike most of our games, this does have real spoilers.
Yeah. Like the handful of games that like intertwine between like the rogue end of the spectrum and like very story heavy end of the spectrum are few and far between. But see our previous episode, Returnal, for me screaming into the void about the ending, which I've come around to a little bit. I'll say that on like almost every other episode. But anyway, or like Inscription or things like that. So this is your spoiler warning tag here in the timestamp descriptions.
Surely people can be listening at least for a little while longer. And are we going to jump right into endgame stuff?
No, maybe not so much endgame, but I think that like the story, at least in like the first like 10 hours or so,
is when Hades kills Dumbledore.
Yes. Spoiler alert. Also, like, it's like sidebar, when people in a podcast say spoiler alert and then like immediately jump into like the massive spoiler, like am I the only one that's just like, I'm just going to give up. I don't have the reaction time to pull my phone out and hit the pause button or like pretend I didn't hear that. And when someone's like, oh, spoiler alert, blah, 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 blah. And you're just like, you know, you could.
Right, you are, Scott. That's why we're doing the exact opposite. And we're talking for like 10 minutes before we get to anything meaty.
The whole rest of the podcast is just talking about the spoiler alert. So, okay. Our story begins. It begins with in media res, where You are 16. You have angry at my father syndrome, and you have leapt out of your royal palace to say, "Enough of this! I'm running away from home for real this time, and the Olympian gods are gonna help me, Prince of the Underworld, Zagreus, escape." Said underworld, which is famously impossible to escape. No one's believed to made it to the surface alive, at least. And being able to harness the power of the gods that you come across and escape through various or four levels of the underworld, from the prison of the underworld, Tartarus, to Asphodel, the lava zone, to the
Fields of Elysium.
Fields of Elysium. You're riding through green fields with the sun on your face.
Hell yeah.
Do not be frightened. And you leave from there to the River Styx with its endless maze of poison shooting satyr men to get to the surface where things lie beyond that. And you are attempting to get to the surface in order to advance the story. But eventually, as we've discussed, because you are severely underpowered, because you have not unlocked all of your meta progression funsies, you will get bludgeoned to death and you die and you reawaken back home where you thought you were escaping from, huh? You walk out of this pool of blood and your grumpy father chastises you. Oh, you thought you could escape, boy, from his behind his mountain of paperwork. And you're just like, ugh. Ugh, I'm so angsty. I have to get out. Ugh. Only my skeleton punching bag knows what I'm really going through. Right, Skelly? And you are meeting with all sorts of features from Greek mythology. You have you're talking Medusa head. You have your rocky ex-girlfriend who punishes you.
Wait, are they canonically they're canonically exes before you pursue
canonically kind of... canonically in the game, but not canonically in real life.
No, I don't think
Zagreus is not real, right? He's not.
No,
like a
no,
real
I believe
Greek.
Zagreus is an actual like he's
figure of Greek myth.
What? I believe so because I believe he has his own wiki page. Colin is frantically googling
yeah,
right
frantically.
Now.
Frantically.
Yeah, no, I believe he has his own wiki page because I think that like the game was originally supposed to be about Theseus.
Does divine child of the son of Zeus as a snake.
Yeah, I think there's some creative liberties.
Fucking weirdos.
I think but, there might be.
But yeah, I think like you progress through the underworld, you find different weapons and abilities, and well, weapon modifiers, I guess, given to you from the gods, and they're like, "We'll help you escape from the underworld, dear boy. Make use of this dashing wave ability that Lord Poseidon is well known in Greek mythos for."
Wait. I mean, like the little piece that's missing there is that like all of Olympus basically is they're having a great time. They know Hades is down below, and they're like, "Oh, wait a minute, Zagreus exists. Oh, he should be up here with us." And so they're like,
"Right, they are." And great setup. It's a great setup. It's like, hey, you got the underworld down below. You got Mount Olympus up above. Zagreus is trying like hell, if you'll forgive the punt, of battle his way up through the depths and take his rightful place on Mount Olympus. And of course, all the gods are into that. They're like, yeah. So they reach out and they bless you with these different abilities, these in-game boons that give you different special abilities and things. And it's a cool, groovy, dare I say, very metal setup.
Yeah, I think like the first time I picked this game up, I was a little baffled by it because I think I was sympathizing hard, Andrew, with you when you were saying like, I don't have any idea what any of these things mean. Like, what's the difference between like this like purple jewel and like the green and red crusted jewels? Like,
well, sorry. No, yeah. No, right. Okay.
But anyway, like
for the record, I do know the difference between those now.
But it took
and have
me
known it for a long time.
It took me like 4 or 5 hours, I think, to like really come to understand like what the hell is all like. I didn't understand where the doors were the first time I played this game, and that like you had to walk up to the thing and like, oh, this is the option it's presenting you, like door A and door B, like go through this one to get this reward. It took me an embarrassingly long time to get that. I think maybe because this was one of the first games that I've played that had that option. Because like with games like
the option of two doors.
Well, like, so for example, Enter the Gungeon.
I don't understand. Right? Oh, okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Gungeon. I'm familiar. Gungeon, yeah. Gungeon or Star of Providence, you are maneuvering through a maze.
Right.
And, like, you will find stuff in that maze. It's not so much like, it's almost like a very simplified FTL style traversal system. But, like, you aren't seeing, like, where the, like, the overall.
Okay, sorry. I misunderstood what you were saying initially. I didn't mean to take the piss out of you.
No,
unnecessarily. But yeah, right. It's not like you're navigating the underworld and, like, having to figure out how all these rooms connect and travel from.
You are
in the game. You enter an arena. You finish the fight in the arena. And then sometimes one, sometimes two, sometimes three doors appear or activate. And go, hey, which of these rewards do you want? Pick your reward for the next room. And then you select one of those and you go to another bespoke, isolated room where you have another arena fight.
Right. And you're always progressing forward. I think that I do remember now thinking, like, the first run or two that I played, being like, is this a map? Should I be trying to remember am I trying to map this in my brain to get to someplace? Can I go back to a room that I've already been in? And the answer is absolutely no. You cannot.
Nah.
But that's one of the things that I think is great about this is that it so drastically simplifies and streamlines everything. I think with the intent of, I don't know, well, I think the intent behind this is to be a gateway drug for speedrunners in that, like, it feels like the Pact of Punishment system at a certain level is just like, okay, optimizing for effectively speedruns. There's a few of the options for that are explicitly for speedruns. And I think that this kind of flow helps to push that along. And I think you are in some cases incentivized to try to dabble with that a little bit. But anyway, coming back to the options of the doors, you have keys, you have darkness, you have gemstones, you got nectar, you got boons from the gods, and the symbology I feel like at the onset feels a little overwhelming, where it's not like, oh, here, like, there's basically no tutorial for this game. It's not like here's a chthonic key, here's
right,
what
it's
going
the
to
first
unlock.
Two runs is the tutorial and the intro.
Yeah, it, I mean, you know, it doesn't pop up with like a text box saying like, darkness is used for blah. Make sure to use it in order to blah, 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 blah. It's more like, oh, here's like a thing I can interact with. Here's these little purple bits. Oh, I can put purple bits into this. I get it now. Okay. And so I feel like that meta progression system is like one of like the three core pillars to the game, where like you have the meta progression, you have the story, and then you have like the actual run-based nature of it. And I don't
and
think
the characters.
This, well, yeah, what, you know,
of I'll, which I'll, there are how many, Will?
30.
Wow. That's a lot of characters, folks.
That is a lot of characters.
Well, they introduce slowly and at certain milestones in the game.
Which was the best?
Artemis, obviously.
No, it's Meg.
What? No, Artemis.
Best girl.
Meg is not one of the Olympian gods, I think is what Will is getting at.
She's the best romance partner.
I mean, bold claim.
Artemis? Oh, you just like Artemis's boons.
Yeah, she's got the best boons, the biggest, best boon. Oh,
she's got the biggest projectile of them all, the most massive arrow that you're going to see the side of Olympus. What's so great about her boons, real quick?
Crit damage is the best thing.
Is it? All right, maybe that's why I'm so lousy at this game. I've been undervaluing crit damage.
I mean, there's a pretty clear delineation of tiers for these, and some of them like do work well together. But in general, like Aphrodite is pretty much shit tier. The other
I see.
What's the other one? The drunkard
Dionysus.
Yeah, terrible. Poseidon, Zeg. Terrible. But the shield woman, what's her face?
Athena.
Yeah, you know these
shield woman.
Athena,
I remember learning about Greek
S-tier,
mythology.
Artemis S-tier.
When I was a wee lad.
The cold lady.
Ladies F-tier.
I said.
F-tier.
Thank you for explaining.
Oh,
I was
wow.
I was grasping at straws trying to figure out why you liked Artemis. I'm like, well, she has that cool giant arrow like god attack.
She's
that.
Also
you don't like cold.
She's also an introvert and does not like hanging out with the rest of the Olympian gods.
Interesting. But anyway, where were we?
I don't know.
We were talking about
The game. Yeah, it dumps a bunch of icons and stuff on you. I got to push back a little bit on this, Scott, because I literally just made a new save slot, which is what I should have done immediately, like 2 weeks ago. But instead, I was just banging my head against the wall trying to play the end game. And I kept saying, I'll start a new slot. And I didn't, and I regret it. So I literally just started a new slot. And I think in your first couple of runs, you don't get multiple doors for a while. And so you're forced to collect a set specific rewards. So it's like the game just spoon feeds you, like, here's some darkness gems, here's a chthonic key, here's
a nickel, kid.
But yeah, there you go. And then so like you get those, and I want to say I assume those are preset, like you're gonna get these to begin with. And it is not until like maybe your, I don't know, 10th or so room, which might be probably your second run, that you are presented with two choices. And like Zagreus says something, there's a really quick line where it's like, oh, there's two choices, two rewards, two doors, something. What I'm trying to say is I think the game, like, it doesn't pop up with a tutorial message, but I believe it goes out of its way to give you these meta progression currencies, and then the characters tell you, like, when you're back in the hub world, what to do with them, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and I think that like that kind of separates it away from something like an Enter the Gungeon, which is like in Hades, it's very verbose and it's so story driven that like you have to be here for the story. Like if you are signing up for this to be like, oh yeah, like I just want to like run and gun and blast stuff and not really pay attention to giant walls of text for multiple minutes at a time, it will probably push back on you a little bit for that. Versus like something like Gungeon, which is like, you know, it has like story beats to it here and there, but like you're not being overwhelmed with exposition all the time. And I think that like what's interesting, and it took me a while to kind of appreciate this, because at first I was like, ah, there's so much meta progression, there's so much to grind through. Like, it's going to take me forever to unlock all these things with the Mirror of Night, which is kind of your main meta progression tracker. That's what gives you your extra dashes, your extra lives, allows you to do... We kind of complain about this every so often, but like, plus 5% more damage to the enemy if you're striking them from behind or whatever. And I thought at the time, like, oh, this is going to take forever to unlock. But I feel like because the story is so intertwined with the runs... that it's like the meta progression is almost an afterthought, where I'm more like interested in the meta progression of the story than I am really of like trying to drive through of like, oh boy, I can't wait to do 2% more damage next time kind of deal. And so I'm curious, like, I feel like Will might have some good insight here as to like why, like, what is it about like the kind of story driven nature of this that feels so well paced, I guess.
Well, as you're going through it, so like, so there's different categories of like the story development per like character, like category. And so the like Mount Olympus, like you randomly encounter them essentially as you're going through it, and you can like select some and have preferences, but basically every time you see the one for the first time, there's a unique dialogue. And then as you go through, and you can give them gifts as kind of one, another meta progression to get other sort of trinkets that help you along. Then they say something special. They also have other sort of like, as you continue to give them gifts that are higher in value, you get more and more unlocks. But then you get like this, the interesting twist where every single one of them has a unique dialogue that's based on you having received a boon from a different one. So as you go through, if you select Artemis first and then you see Zeus will say something like, oh, it looks like you're hanging out with the Huntress. Here, let me help out with that boon too. And then on top of that, there are there's a probability that you'll get like for every combination of these different gods that you'll get like the unique synergized boon, which like is like this. And so it's just like, it's a really cool experience to be like, oh, I didn't know that existed. Now suddenly there's this extra layer of like the highest tier of boon, you know, potentially, as long as it synergizes well with like what you're doing. And it's just like, so that's kind of like one element, all those characters. Then you have all the people in the house itself. You've got Cerberus, the three-headed dog, the only character you can pet, I believe, in the game.
Ask your doctor about Cerebrex. Sorry, could I get that pronunciation one more time?
Cerberus,
I believe, is the generally accepted term or pronunciation.
Cerberus.
I mean, ancient Greek, it'd be Kerberos, wouldn't it? Oh, great point. C's with K. So
would it be like Metal Gear Solid? It's all Cerberus to me. Am I right, fellas? Sorry to interrupt.
No, you can
critically pet. Very important.
Right. But they have this really great build. Like, you have this relationship with this dog. It's the fierce thing that kills stuff. And then you finally get into like the just before the end scene. And there he is in front of you. And your first time you're playing, you're like, oh, no, I've got to kill my dog. He's the final boss. And then, oh, no, it turns out you just have to give him this satyr sack. I don't know what is a satyr?
I believe
it's a snack tree. It's like a treat to get him out of the way.
I think it's a sack of just ground up. Of like those satyr enemies that are shooting the poison darts at you. In my brain, I'm thinking it's just a big sack of those guys that have been like like mince-meated up together.
Interesting. Yeah, I guess I didn't think about it too much. That's interesting. I assumed it was treats that the satyrs had put into a sack, but why would they do that?
Yeah.
I think the idea of it's processed, freeze-dried, like kibble. It's satyr kibble.
I'm assuming it's been fermented as well.
Ooh,
just
delicious.
Sitting in a vat.
Ugh.
I think it also gives me a little bit of catharsis having to deal with those really irritating enemies in that final biome that are just poison everywhere. And the idea of like those satyr guys being like ground up and being fed to Cerberus is
very
just
cathartic.
Like, ah, yes, that feels like a win in my book. I do really like how it says like Cerberus defeated in like the big title scroll at the top when you give him his bag of treats. Yep. And then just underneath that's like, actually not really. He just ate the treats.
That is very cute. But this is the first time I'm going to say coward devs. You had this great opportunity for like, oh man, Zagreus. Like he wanted to realize his dream of escaping the underworld. He's going to have to fight. He's to the death, even if it is temporary. His best friend, man's best friend, Zagreus' best friend in the underworld, the one creature he could depend on for, you know, absolutely. But then, yeah, you just give him like a bag of treats, he walks away. Hmm?
No,
you want them to kill a dog?
Do you know how many things you kill in this game?
They all come back.
Very few dogs.
Kill a dog. I'm vegan and I'm against killing any dogs, especially three-headed ones. but I thought, oh man, this is going to be like a pretty dramatic, note that the game's going to hit. And then it's like, not really.
No, that's so, the best part. That's the comedy of it though. It's the version of expectations. I think they did that really well.
I'm of two minds about it. I was a little disappointed. I also do at the same time. I do. You're right, Will. I do admire the joke.
Now, Andrew, when crucially you walk through that door, out onto the surface, the snowy surface of the earth,
yeah.
Gaia herself, and you see redacted,
what boons does she give?
You see the final boss of the game, the titular name of the game, your father, Hades,
yeah.
is there to stop you from
right.
gallivanting around on the overworld.
Mm-hmm.
Crucially, Hades, your father in that boss fight, can summon Cerberus to fight you, or at least like summon him as a like basically one of the companion items to use against you in that fight, I believe.
Really? Oh, that's kind of a fun touch.
I think it's on the Extreme Measures 4 difficulty.
Oh,
or something
now that's
like that.
A spoiler, folks.
Yeah. Well, spoiler alert.
Well, that's a nice touch. I appreciate that. I'm kind of joking. I'm kind of joking.
You know what would
be
fun?
Clear. I kid the developers.
You know what would be fun, though? If, like, on the 13th run, the 13th time you get there or whatever, you do have to fight him, and it never happens again ever after that. Just one single time, and he absolutely owns you.
And he yeah. and you get got.
I mean, there's so many things like about this game that like so I put in 80 hours into this game previously, and I thought, okay, we'll come back to it. I'm sure I've seen everything at this point because I've rolled credits on it. I've gotten the 10 ending win or the 10 win ending. And like, what else could there be? Oh, there's an epilogue. And I thought like, yeah, okay. But how much more stuff is there? Like, I don't know. And now the 100+ hours that I put in, I don't know that I've really ever seen a repeated line of dialogue in this game somehow, which is like baffling to me. Like the amount of just like production value for this kind of game, for this level of like game studio, just seems like on a completely different plane of existence almost. Like everything from just like the density of like the art detail to like how that works into the aesthetic of it to like all of, and yeah, okay, granted, like there are repeated voice lines here and there, but like it's like it's so new and fresh basically every time. Like, oh, I didn't know that Zeus had this line of dialogue, or I didn't know that like once I progressed beyond this certain point, like Demeter will say this thing. Like, interesting stuff. And the like it's there's like such good writing to it, but also comedy. Like, not even just with like the Cerberus defeated thing, like that changes every time, and things that like I've never seen before. But like even just like interactions during boss fights, like you when you fight the bosses from like Tartarus, for example, you're fighting your quote-unquote ex Meg or her Fury sisters, there will be lines of dialogue there that are just like, oh, like that's a neat interesting little interaction that I haven't seen before, that is also different on higher difficulties that like maybe I don't know 10% of people ever playing the game will ever see. You change, like you fight the Lanurian Hydra enough times in the second biome that our wisecracking hero Zagreus just starts calling her Lernie after a while. It's like, hey Lernie, how's it going? Fun interaction. I feel
the game is very responsive, and the characters in it are very responsive to like the players, what's going on with the player. So like, you know, you die and right out of the gate you respawn, and the first NPC that you have the opportunity to talk to is Hypnos, who is a goofball, and generally I'm annoyed to see most of the time, but it is neat that like he will comment specifically like, oh hey, you got killed by X creature or by Y, you know, trap, like. And that's like, that's neat. Like, you know, we play these games so that, I mean, at least, a big draw, I think, of video games and what makes the medium unique is that it is reactive to the player's input and the player's actions. I had to your point, Scott, and to the point that we're talking about, I, in my most recent playthrough, which ended in a very frustrating loss, we won't get into it right now, I had switched off one of the heat options. There's a heat option that makes the boss battles more complicated and more difficult. So two runs ago, I played with it on max, and I got to the third boss, and they are wearing these, the two bosses are wearing fancy armor that's only on if you select this difficulty setting. So they're wearing their fancy army. They're talking about the fancy armor, and it's like a cool new bespoke fight with like new features, new moves, and new art, and it's really neat. So then I went through, my next playthrough, I switched that option off. So they went back to their normal gear. And when I entered the arena for that fight, what's his dick? Theseus. He's like, hey, this guy, he won't shut up about his boat. Am I right, folks? His damn ship. He says, oh my, you know, he says, we're going to have to defeat you this time without our new armor. And I'm like, what? The game took into account the fact that the last time I fought them was with the fancy armor. Now they don't have the fancy armor. And the fact that they remarked on that was very impressive. So the game is full of that. It's great. It's great.
Little content things like that. I mean, it kind of reminds me of like after Baldur's Gate 3 came out, and there were all these weird stories on the internet of like, if you do this crazy set of things, you'll get this one weird dialogue option that no one has ever seen. And it's like, I don't know why you'd ever do that. But I think that Hades is kind of in that same boat of like, they've got a little weird comment for pretty much anything that you do. Mm-hmm. Most people probably see the same ones, but
yeah, I know. Well, here's, I do have like, I mean, it's not an infallible system. It's not perfect. There are periodically repeated pieces of dialogue, such as Meg is always surprised when I beat her. Hey, newsflash, Andrew Harshman has never lost a Meg fight ever.
Is that ever. Actually true?
That is true.
Even on your first run through?
The first time I fought her was the first time I beat her.
Wow.
And I've been winning ever since.
That's why she's so mad at you all the time.
That's why she's so mad. And now that could, one could argue that, well, maybe I was just so crappy at the game initially. I got so many meta progression points and I upgraded so much.
Yeah, wait, how many times did you lose before you got to
her? I mean, I don't remember. This was like a year and a half ago. But just for the record, never a loss. And now I was bragging about that to Helen, and she said, well, there's your problem. You know, you should lose to her so you can get some of the unique loss dialogue and you can explore the whole romance storylines. And I was like, romance storylines? What? I've played this game for 30 hours. I didn't know that there were storylines such as that. And apparently I learned last week that this game has way more depth in the like character relationship system and storylines and story arcs than I had any idea. Because honestly, I don't think the game does a great job of like selling you on the investment of, what are they? The nectar or whatever. Like you get these nectar meta progression items and you can gift them to people. And, at least in my experience, I didn't feel like I was, properly instructed by the game on how like useful and important to storylines those are.
Hmm.
What else did you do with them?
I just gave them all to Chaos. I'm like, oh, cool. This will make my Chaos boons better. I thought, oh, I'll invest them all in Chaos. I'll get super awesome Chaos boons and I'll be able to beat this game. Which, sidebar, this speaks to, I think, maybe a big problem that I personally had with how I approached Hades, which is I approached it as, this is a hard game. This is a fun game. I need to conquer the gameplay and really embrace the gameplay. But as we are talking, it is becoming more and more clear that, you know, you really got to come here, as you said earlier, Scott, for the story. And that's not to say the gameplay is like bad or, you know, not without merit. Mm. It's that the storyline is kind of, you know, the star of the show, and that it is supported and works well in Congress with the gameplay.
And if I remember right, I believe the nectar / ambrosia gift giving to Olympian gods and stuff like ranks up your boon like relationship meter such that like they have a higher chance of becoming or like a higher chance of like being rare or something like that. So like I believe that there's some kind of gameplay incentive for like advancing the story advances the meta progression currency, advances your ability to beat the game, which advances the story. So it like they're all like intertwined into each other in a pretty smart way that seems a little overwhelming at first, but like,
well,
once
not,
you
not if you're me I didn't figure it out, because apparently I should have been spending all of those nectar bottles on the NPCs back at the hub world, so that they could give me quests and I could learn more about them, which I finally started engaging with that system. I'm like, oh, well, one, again, I was just thinking about it as a mechanical thing. Well, mm-hmm. I should give these to a powerful person who's going to give me powerful abilities to help me beat the game. And then one more thing in my defense, when I did back like a year and a half ago, my recollection is that I did consciously say, okay, I'm going to give these to one of the people back at the hub world. And it's like, you can look it up. It's like, what's my relationship with them? Oh, there's like 3 hearts or whatever. Mm-hmm. Let me fill those hearts up. I fill them up and I'm like, great. Here comes the unlock. Come on, baby. And then the screen appears and more hearts appear. I'm like, what game? What's the switcheroo? I thought I needed to give them 3. Now you told me I got to give them like 4 or 5 more. Come on, forget about it. And then that's when I stopped engaging with that system until a week ago. But anyway, sorry, I'm derailing. What were you saying, Scott?
I think that like so there's a lot of relationship building, and I think that like the story as it precipitates, you know, you interact with Meg and her sisters every time you fight out of Tartarus. You interact, I guess, quote unquote, with the Bone Hydra every time you escape out of the lava level. You have like there's an interesting kind of character arc to like Theseus and Asterius's like brotherly relationship every time that you fight through Elysium, even there, and like the final boss fight, like there's like an advancement of like how Zagreus fits in with all these other different characters like every time you run through it, which even so, like, okay, you beat Hades, spoiler, we're getting back into spoiler territory here, you beat final boss Hades, he's like, oh no, I'm getting sucked back to the underworld, and you're free to roam. You're free to roam the surface of the earth. At this point, I was like, am I supposed to do this? Like, did I like break the game or something? The first time I beat Hades, I'm like, I beat it. I beat the game. Like, that's it. Like, I felt like, oh, this is like an electrifying moment. You go out to like the surface of the earth, and it's like this very like peaceful, like artistic, beautiful scene of like, oh, this is what it's like to not be in like the burrows of hell and everything. And then you finally meet your real mother, Persephone. And I think it's slowly revealed as you like, you know, die and try to escape again over and over, that Nyx, the mother of night, who I believe Zagreus was brought up thinking that that was his birth mother, reveals that, oh, actually, I'm not your birth mother. She's still out on the surface. So it becomes this, like, the goal has now changed. Instead of like, oh, I'm going to be angry at my father, I'm going to escape from home, like, it's now to seek out and find your birth mother. You finally beat Hades. You're like, you meet her in her like little farmstead for the first time, and like, oh, you're having this very nice little conversation with her. Oh, this is great. And then like, there's this really like stressful like heartbeat thump that comes out of nowhere, and I'm just like, oh my god, what is happening? And you're like, Zagreus is like having like a heart attack and like dying in front of his birth mother, and dies. And he dies and comes back to the house of Hades, where you start the game. And it's just like, oh, but like, I was there, I escaped. And then it's revealed like, no, you can't live on the surface. Like, the fates have decided that you can't live out on the surface of the earth. Like, you can't live there. Like, you will die and be transported back here. And so it's like, I don't know if this was co-opted from like the actual mythos of like Zagreus being the child of Persephone, but died in like as a child or something. It got sent to the underworld.
One of the ones is he died as a child and was torn apart and eaten by the Titans, and then was reborn as Dionysus or something.
Yeah, so it's a little different.
I'm sorry. But anyway. I assume that this is all the creation of what are they called again? Supergiant?
Supergiant, yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, and it's its own original story. I don't think there's anything in Greek mythos about Zagreus getting Cerberus out of the way with a bag of dog treats.
Well, according to Plutarch.
Yeah, Herodotus was a well-known and accurate historian of all things video game related. But so the story, so like you would think like, oh, that's the end of the story. Like in most games, like, oh, yep, that's it. Congrats. Like that's the bittersweet ending. Hint, hint, Returnal. But instead you are given like this way to like, oh, okay. Like now I have a mission, even though my time here will be short, I will battle out of Hades. I'll like send my father back to the underworld and I'll just spend 10 minutes with my birth mother and then die. And then be like, okay, well, see you next time, mom. And then like so this is the 10 ending sequence of like the 10 victory sequence here. And so you go through this thing 10 times, and then spoiler alert, if you're on your 10th run, Hades will not fight you. He'll say, you know what? You've bested me 9 other times. I'm laying down my spear. You've earned it, son. Go get him.
And you're just wait, hold on. Critically though, does he say you've earned it, or does he say I don't want to fight you anymore, or like you want to do this, so
I think
whatever, I won't be able to stop you.
I don't remember the exact dialogue, but I think it's along the lines of you've earned it, as opposed to I'm given up. I don't care anymore, kind of deal.
I see. Well, I'm sorry. I guess my interpretation, having not actually seen the cutscene, was more of like, it's clear that you are dead set on this. And you cannot be dissuaded. So go forth, Zagreus.
It might be that also.
I'll look it up later.
But it's definitely not a like,
right.
I take this job and shove it kind of deal.
It feels
very much more earned.
And but then, sorry, do continue. So the 10th win.
So your 10th win, I believe, is when you convince Persephone to come back to the underworld with you on Charon's boat down the river Styx.
Yep.
And it's this very nice like credit sequence of like that's the credit sequence of like, you know, Supergiant Games presents Hades, and it's like you're going down the river almost
and
like
you're
a,
seeing all the biomes that you played through as you're traveling along and original song is playing and it's being sung by two important NPCs, and the fact that they're singing it together is like such a big deal. And it's kind of a weird song, something about in the blood. I kind of sus lyrics, but you know, whatever. It's Greek mythology. I don't know. We'll let it slide. Yeah, it's a great credit sequence because I watched it on YouTube.
There you go. So yeah, very very Super Mario World in that sense. But like, and then like if you continue to play the game afterwards, you get these like snippet endings of like, okay, you beat Hades, you go out, but like your mom's not there. So what happens? Like, well, we'll just leave it up to the imagination of the player that, Zagreus befell a flower, and because of his allergies, this happened. And then it plays the death sequence or something. They're all really funny. Like, they're all like very well written. You would think that like you've beaten the game 10 times, you didn't think there would be anything left, but they still have like these very clever little things there of like, it reminds me of like the Simpsons episode where they're all stranded on the island and it's like, oh, well, and who came to the rescue? Oh, let's say Mo. It's very much in that vein of like, you know, oh, what? How did Zagreus die?
A bee bit his bottom and his bottom got big and therefore he died.
We've all been there. So, and is there not, I was led to believe by Helen, past guest and friend of the show, that there was like an epilogue where you're trying to like patch things up with the gods or something.
Yeah. So you've gotten your birth mother home and like you, and like, again, this is another thing that like, how does everyone else's dialogue change as a result of that? And like, you're still like, yeah, maybe I'll do a run with like, I don't know. I'll try a speed run to beat Will's time with the bow with this, but like, during that, you're being treated with all of this new dialogue of like, the queen of the underworld has returned. And what does Dusa have to say this time? And how is Meg's reaction? And what about Achilles? And what about Skelly? And like, they all have these different takes on it and everything. And there's just like a lot of like unpacking of like, if you care about these characters at all, you could not. If you've beaten the game 10 times, you're maybe a little invested, but there's so much more interesting like stuff as a result of it. The epilogue is like, okay, Persephone's come back to the underworld. How do we patch things up with the Olympic gods, the Olympian gods? Because they still think that Nyx is Hades' birth mother. And now Persephone's gone. Oh no, what's happening? And so your goal then is to like use nectar on gods, increase their relationship meters. Some of them have specific criteria.
So you're telling me I did it in reverse? I should have been saving the nectars and giving them to... I gave the nectars to the gods right away because of course I would, because they're the ones giving me good in-game abilities. The game is incentivizing me to give them to... Whatever, anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, you eventually max them out, but then, like, for the epilogue, it's like, you give them a little bit more. It's not, like, resetting the entire thing. But there's, like, various unlock conditions. So, for example, Dionysus's favor requires forging bonds with at least 6 different characters and giving a minimum of 10 ambrosia to any number of characters. Ares' favor requires completing the War God Lust Prophecy and slaying a minimum of 10,000 enemies total.
Holy shit.
Yeah. There's some that are less involved. Like Artemis's favor requires seeing multiple strings of dialogue in which she talks about her partner Callisto. This gauge is unlocked when Artemis says that she feels that she can be herself with Zagreus. So some of it is things that you have to do. Others are just kind of like things that fall out as a result of that. And for the most, like I had them like listed off as like, okay, I need to do this next. I need to do this next. But like they all just kind of like happened as a result of me playing the game. And it didn't really feel like it was necessary for me to go out and be like, okay, well now I have to go do this in order to, it didn't feel homework assignment-y. It felt more of like, oh, like, you know, this is the trigger that sets that off. Yeah, maybe I have to go and do like one little thing. Aphrodite's favor requires Zagreus to illustrate his capacity for love both platonically and passionately by forging bonds with Dusa, Thanatos, and Megara, You will trigger one dialogue with the goddess for each bond you forge with them, and a fourth one to actually get the favor.
And also, if you get full relationship status with Thanatos and Meg, you can have a poly relationship with them.
Yeah, that's also something that Helen pointed out. I think one of the first things she said to me when we started discussing this game and I was having problems with it is, she's like, what, you don't like Hades? The game where you can live out your pansexual thruple dream with like two gods? And I'm like, what? What are you talking about? I'm like, that's a thing? All right, here's another thing where I have to shout. Coward developers. There is not an option. There is not a physical romantic option with Dusa. Which, hey, that's great that there's, you know, asexual, like, you know, visibility and that we're getting that that presence.
Yeah, you can't fuck your dad either. So that's like, I mean,
they're cowards. Cowards. Absolutely.
Now here's the thing.
Oh, well, of course the floating head would be asexual.
The floating snake head.
Come on. That's such a boring choice.
Like, I feel like
make the sexy femboy Grim Reaper, you know, asexual. That's a more interesting choice.
I feel like with Dusa specifically, I feel like there is an element of HR is going to get involved if you are doing
there's a
any
power
kind of
balance there.
Yeah,
that's your employee. Yeah, no, that's not.
We
right.
don't endorse that here.
Inappropriate workplace behavior, as we have all been told in those sexual harassment training videos.
What could you argue that, like,
Jesus Christ.
is Zagreus, I mean, he's not really like her employer. Like, he's a prisoner. Like, in the underworld.
Yeah, but
so, I mean, they're on similar footing.
But her dad, but his dad's,
but she has no feet. Never mind. Let's move on.
Both her god and her employer.
Yeah. But real quick, thank God Thanatos is not asexual, because what a mighty fine man. Let me tell you. I was trying to pursue that fine fellow. But alas, I was actively trying to like explore that part of the game. Like, oh, let's do the dating sim part. And I played for like, I don't know, 5 hours. And every time I ran into him, because he appears kind of randomly, right? It's basically just RNG, whether you have a Thanatos encounter. It would always be when I didn't have any nectar.
Like, well, that's why you just always have a nectar on you so you can romance Meg.
Well, I mean, to each their own. Meg, you know what? Never mind. This is sounding more and more like one of the first episodes I was on, where I was positing that the last spell is basically like a dating sim because the NPCs are so attractive. But we're not going to get into that, and I'm not going to turn this into let's power rank. Let's smash or pass all the characters from Hades.
How about we'll save that for a smash Patreon or pass? Episode. How about smash or pass the weapons?
Oh, great! Yeah, what do we got? What are our favorite weapons? I like the spear.
I think the fists are the most fun. They're not necessarily the best.
Here's the deal with the spear, though. Check it out. Of the form of Zagreus, you throw it out, it comes back. You get the damage on the throw. You get the backstab damage on the back, on the return. And, ooh, it's a lovely thing. The fists, I agree, are very fun to use also.
Can we all agree that the machine gun is the worst?
Yes.
Least fun by a large margin. This is actually what made me realize that
Enter the Gungeon is a great game.
It's like, oh,
combat, great controls.
It made me realize why I like this game and not Enter the Gungeon.
Interesting.
Which is, I don't like the gun part. Because I
disliked. Whoa, you've gone in a direction I didn't
playing
expect.
Hades with a gun as much as I disliked Enter the Gungeon.
Hold on just a minute, Colin. I thought you were going in a different direction. I thought you were saying, wow, this taught me how great Gungeon is. Legitimately, I thought you were going to say that. But instead, you're trying to compare the gunplay of Hades to Gungeon. The gunplay in Hades is garbage. It's awful. It is no
You're bueno. Garbage.
Like, you are not using a stick to aim. You're hardly aiming your gun in Hades.
I mean, it's not
like
still
auto
bad.
Aim.
And to be clear, it's not a twin stick shooter.
I hate reloading. Reloading is the least fun thing you can do in a game.
Yeah. All right. Well, whatever. We agree for different reasons that the gun is not fun. Very
great.
That's good enough.
Well, I might push back on that a little bit, because yes, the reloading is unfun. I think if there was, so each one of these weapons has multiple sub varieties to it. So like you have the sword that you start off with. You eventually unlock the spear, the bow, the shield, the gauntlet fists, and then, as we're talking about, a literal gun, just a straight up gun. And each one of these has different aspects or variants to it, where some of them might have a charge up ability. Some of them might put down like an AoE effect that they didn't previously. Some of them might, like the fists, for example, there's one aspect of it that sucks an enemy in towards you for you to punch them. Combining that, like the sucking in thing, with like what the Poseidon dash that pushes them out. And then you get like suck in, dash out, suck in, dash out. And you can change in.
I thought we were done talking about the romances. Sorry. I couldn't help it. You hit it so many times. There's a lot of things I don't like about this game, but like the variety of ways to play it. Like the different weapons are all distinct. They are all fun to some extent. The gun stinks, but like it was fun to play like one or two runs with, you know, and like it looks kind of cool and it sounds kind of cool. But and like think, every gun offers a unique way to play the game, and they're all interesting and generally enjoyable.
And crucially, like that's not even the end of it, because one of the door option boon things you can pick up is the hammer, which to the astute viewer will notice that is the hammer from Bastion, this first super giant game.
What?
Nice
Easter egg.
But
very
that,
cute.
That like alters your weapon even more. That can like totally change how your build flows throughout the game. So for example, let's take the gun that everyone hates, quote unquote. I think a fun way to play with the gun is with the aspect of Eris, which shoots out your special, you launch like a grenade into an area. If you like dash into that area and you absorb that blast, you can do more damage with it. There's hammer modifiers for this variant of the gun that allow you to like shoot out like four grenades, or like the grenades like have a totally different projectile bouncing experience or something like that, where it just like it completely changes like this one like sub part of this one style of weaponry into something totally different. And depending on what boons, like Olympian boons, you might have, it's kind of a clever risk reward system, because crucially you can't say no to these hammer upgrades, and I don't remember if you can re-roll them. So if you get a hammer upgrade that's like I've been investing into the attack for this gun thing and it's working really well, let's see what hammer options I got. Oh, this is going to change the attack to like split into three beams instead of just the one concentrated one.
Yeah, but you always get three options.
You do get three options. You can't re-roll them. And if like
there, it's a huge miss. There needs to be a button that says, you know what? Forget it. Keep your hammer. Give me 100 gold. Like you'd think in a different game, in a game that is designed in a different way. I'm not going to say better, but I'll let the audience decide. In a different way, in a different game, you would be encouraged to dabble and to experiment. Ooh, let me try out these different options available to me and see how I can modify my gun.
That's what the scrolls are for. Go ahead.
I don't know what that is. I don't know what you're talking about.
Of course. That's
I'm sorry. I've got 35, 40 hours in this game, and it's my fault that I don't understand all the minutiae.
You start getting the prophecies within a few hours, within 4 or 5 hours, you're starting to get those prophecies foretold. And there's a little icon next to items you haven't picked up before. And if you
I think we're talking about something else. But the point I wanted to make was, here's the problem with the hammer, is that sometimes you pick up the hammer and you look at an option that you haven't tried before and you go, you know what? I'm going to be bold. I'm going to be experimental. I'm going to try this new hammer option. And you select it and you find that, your build's broken. And the weapon now operates in a completely different way. And all of the boons and the build that you've been working towards are for naught. Now, fortunately, once per biome, at the end of a biome, you have the option to... Can you
sell some things, but not always.
Can you sell the hammer upgrades?
I don't think so. I don't think that. I think the hammer upgrades are
permanent. So I like the idea of the hammer, but like, I mean, it was such a game. It felt like a gamble every time. And unless I knew exactly which hammer upgrade I was going for, it was like, it felt like such a risk. It's like, well, this might break my build.
But there's almost always one that's like, oh, it changes you very slightly. Like, oh, it makes your thing a little bit bigger. That doesn't have any downside.
Yeah, or it's just like, I mean, if you're focusing on the special or the attack or the casting, those are your three things. It's usually like, oh, well, if you're focused on attack, well, it's going to give you a bunch of shit for the other ones. Or if it like, if it's going to fuck up your attack, you just choose one of the options. The only way it can really screw you is if you're focused on the attack and it gives you three attack options and all of them are like terrible for this energy they have. And that the probability of that is so small. I think you're just being a big whiner about it.
I see what Andrew's complaining about. I think it's enough of a possibility that there needs to be a forget the upgrade, give me the gold. Or there needs to be an easier way to undo that ability.
I think most of the time there's one that's going to make your build better. Almost all of the time. But in that rare case, it would be nice to... or just skip it entirely. Maybe you don't even get gold, but they will not let you skip.
Right.
It forces you to pick an option.
I mean, it's perhaps... I mean, yeah, part of the fault lies with me. But like, it's happened at least... to me personally, I don't know. I mean, I'm not exaggerating when I say like 10 times I've had runs derailed because I decided to try something new and the game said, ha ha, not so fast. You thought you'd be fun and experiment and try some new build. Yeah. Well, you chose wrong.
But I mean, that's more of a function of I wanted to try this new thing out and turns out it doesn't synergize well. But that's like true of a lot of...
No. I'm not saying it didn't synergize well. I'm saying it destroyed my build 10 times. And maybe I'm exaggerating. Let's say half a dozen times. But in a game where the run takes like a half hour and just to have like your build and your run derailed is, I think, a big problem. But hey, I mean, that's one out of four of us saying it's a problem. So, you know... maybe this isn't a common player experience.
Well, I would say that like the hammer offers like anti-synergistic specific effects maybe 30% of the time. But like the other 70% of the time, it's like, oh, like this is something that seems like actually interesting or useful. Or like Will saying, I'll just be like, well, this doesn't really seem like it's worked, like any of these options work with my build, so I'll just pick the one that like I'm not focusing on, like, oh yeah, I'll up the attack because I'm just doing like a special
That's a bad feeling too, where it's like, oh, let me pick the one that I'm not going to use, and it's like, oh great, well I've wasted one of my reward rooms. I think it's a big issue,
breaking your build, but it's a small issue.
All right, well, very well, it's we think it's an issue. I guess we're somewhat in agreement.
So I feel like we've talked about a lot of stuff, but do we like the combat? Is the combat good?
I think it is, yes.
it's pretty good. It's pretty good is what I would say.
I like it. I think it's good.
Let me ask you all this. Do you ever have a problem where you shoot in the absolute wrong direction?
You mean you can't see the mouse? Are you a mouse?
Reposition. I dash around an enemy, I go to fire, and I'm aimed 180 degrees the wrong direction.
Wait, I guess the first question, a pre-question is, what are we all playing with? I was playing with a controller.
What controller? I'm using a PS5 controller. And
I'm using
if the PS5
a
controller
Steam
is
controller, the bastard child of all controllers.
With joysticks or like with those weird touchpads?
Well, it has one joystick and one weird touchpad.
What on earth are we talking? All right. It sounds like it's a personal problem. Okay. In general,
I've had that happen every once in a while, but Will uses keyboard and mouse.
And
you would never make such a mistake.
And the cursor, even if there's an option to like make it bigger, and it's still like almost invisible when things get really chaotic.
Oh my.
And that can get really frustrating because you're like, I want to shoot this direction. Where the fuck is my mouse?
I can see that. Yeah.
And but the mouse and keyboard is the best way to play the bow, which is the best weapon. And of course, I play the best stuff. At least on this like the recent 7 hours or whatever I just played, because I know that's the best one, and I just want to play with the best thing that I enjoy the most instead of the shit tier gun, for instance.
Very good, very good. But back to the question at hand. Enough of my petty problems that are specific to my game experience with the Hades. The combat, generally speaking, I think it feels good and like the storyline and the dialogue, responsive, like there's good feedback. And once you get a run going, it gives you that feeling of like empowerment, like I've upgraded myself in a smart, wise way. And I'm really, sucking it to them. I'm really feeling powerful and cool and in control. I would say it's pretty good. I don't know if it's
at least 10 times
part of the game
as Enter the Gungeon. I think we can all agree on that though, for sure.
You know, the thing that I feel
they're
like,
tough to compare.
I feel like Gungeon does the bullet part better. I think Hades does maybe the speed better. Cause I was going through, I saw like Andrew was playing Enter the Gungeon again. I'm like, okay, clearly he's going to have some Enter the Gungeon talking points. I need to have some Enter the Gungeon counter talking points. So I need to fire it up. I need to refresh myself with some Gungeoneering here. And I'm just like, oh man. Yeah. Okay. Like again, they're totally different games. They're still in the same Uber genre, but like, when I'm in a room in like the first biome of Enter the Gungeon, I'm getting like a three-phase fight, feels glacially slow. It feels like, depending on like the RNG that I've gotten of like whatever gun that I have, if it's good or not, I could be like throwing bananas or using like the D-pad gun and just like barely being able to hit guys, and it's just taking forever. Whereas in Hades, like I've been on a mission to beat Will's fastest time, and those like some of those early rooms that you can clear out in the first biome of Hades, like 15 seconds maybe. And so like the speed difference there is one thing. Like Gungeon, the bullets are like bigger and just like way more obvious of like, here's a bullet coming, make sure to dodge out of the way. In Hades, it's like there's, in some cases, there's so much shit happening on the screen, you're just like, how could anyone play this game without the Athena dash where you're constantly reflecting everything back and forth? It it almost kind of feels just like too much. Not quite to the same of like too much as like Star of Providence or I forget if there was like another like insanely zany bullet hell game that we've played. But yeah, I think like the combat with Hades being such that it is, There's also crucially ways for you to delete the bullets, where I believe if you use AoE effects,
yeah,
those
or
can
you
like,
can just hit them.
Yeah,
most of them. Just,
and the shield weapon and all of its variants, crucially, just straight up block the bullets, and like you don't have to worry about like really getting hit at all or relying on the Athena dash at all. You can just block the bullets. So I think it's more flexible in that regard. But if it feels much more in the realm of like hack and slashy with bullet hell on it, as opposed to pure bullet hell where you are like countering their bullets with your bullets. Also the dash is better.
The dash is good.
Better. Well, I would counter
you
by
dash
saying
like
that
five
Gungeon,
times sometimes.
Gungeon has so many different dashes. Oh, there's such a wealth and variety.
We
breadth
can't
and depth.
Talk about Gungeon.
Yeah. Well, I
we
mean,
we
brought it up.
Slay the Spire.
Colin,
there's no dashing.
First.
There's no dashing in Slay the Spire.
So the dashing in Returnal is really good because
all dash all the time. Welcome to the Dash Cast.
Actually, there is a dash. Never
but
mind.
I was going to say in my mind, big difference between the gameplay, the combat of like Gungeon and Hades is that Gungeon has infinitely better ranged combat. Like you actually have to aim your character to a greater extent. I mean, I suppose that's arguably you do have to do that when you're rocking the bow. Honestly, I barely played with the bow. So what am I talking about? What do I know? And then like the melee combat, there is melee combat in Gungeon, obviously, but it's not amazing. And whereas in Hades, melee combat is a huge focus. I don't especially enjoy the melee combat. Mostly because I'm lousy at like, for example, when I use the fist and I'm fighting the bosses, I'm like terrible at it. But anyway, I think those are kind of are two big distinctions. The Gungeon, of course, is focusing on guns, on ranged combat, whereas Hades has more of a focus of fine tuning the melee.
Do we think related to the combat in Hades, Does it get too button mashy at the end?
Yes, a little bit. Sometimes my fingers hurt by the end.
Yeah, I was my left thumb was like, I woke up one morning and it was definitely I was feeling it. Yeah, of course. We are getting a pantomime from Will of WASD mouse. Yes, we would be playing it with mouse and keyboard, but I gotta have more directional control of my dodge. Of my dash. Like, I can't be just dodging in 8 directions. Like, I need to be able to dodge in any direction that my thumbstick guides me. Can we go back real quick to the end game?
No.
I didn't want to interrupt. Absolutely not. I didn't want to interrupt Scott, your beautiful synopsis of like the breakdown of like, all right, you know, here's one, you know, here are the different milestones. Y'all will recall, everyone will remember, or you may remember that when we covered Into the Breach, my biggest complaint about that game was there was the lack of end game, that the end game didn't exist. With Hades, I'm going to say the exact opposite and say the biggest problem with this game is the end game. I like the idea. The idea of motivating the player to like beat the game multiple times. Great. Awesome. Love it. But the speed at which it dispenses more information, new information to you, is way too slow. 10 times? Excuse me? It's got to be half. The second time you beat the game. All right, so check it out. The first time you beat the game, you show up, you meet your mom. Yeah, you know, all right, you get this nice little like Hallmark feel good moment. It's somewhat effective. It's somewhat not effective, in my humble opinion. And it's like, she's like, wait, what? I thought you were dead.
Right? I thought you had been eaten by the Titans. Plutarch said.
Like Plutarch, like it said on the Wikipedia article. So she's like, I thought you were dead, Zagreus. Oh, but you're alive. And immediately my thought was, well, why didn't Hades like, what? Why did Hades like misrepresent that? Right. It's like my immediate thought. And so then I'm like, oh shoot, I got to get back and beat the game again so I can get more information. Cause it sets that up. It's like, oh, Zagreus, he's a creature of the underworld. He can only survive outside of the underworld for a temporary period of time. So he dies on the surface, goes back. I'm like, ah, quick, I got to go beat it again. I beat it the second time. I get to the next cutscene. This is the second ending, right? The second ending cutscene. And the only development in like a minute and a half long cutscene is, why did Hades lie to me? He lied to me. We got to figure out why. And it's like, I know that he lied to you. We already knew that. We already established that. Where's my new content? Whereas in Gungeon, when I'm replaying the game and beating the game is incentivizing me. Hey, you should play through the game with a different character. You should beat it again. You are treated to a new story sequence with new assets and a new boss fight with new enemies. And like, for my money, like, you know, if I am having to beat the game multiple times, there better be something juicy and good at the end of that ending. Now, admittedly, once you beat the game 10 times, there is a juicy piece of content at the end, which is that wonderful credits sequence and the epilogue. But beating the game 10 times and just putting out these teeny tiny little breadcrumbs of story so slowly is a big problem in my opinion. What do y'all think?
And I think on top of that, if I remember right, there isn't an indication, like if you didn't know that it was a 10 time trigger ahead of time and you were just like, oh, this is just how the game ends now.
They just like, talk in circles
in perpetuity for like the next 100 runs that I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it would feel maybe a little underwhelming.
All the other characters support the idea that the story has been developing, though. When you get back to the House of Hades, they're like, oh, what had happened? Well, here's my opinion about this. I wonder what will happen next. I think this might happen. You should look for, you know, what does Knight and Nyx have to say about this? You know, there's that's the actual ending is just a small part of the overall story developing. And so
sure. And I think that's great. Again, to the point that like the game's very responsive and like the characters are all like react. Like that's awesome. That's great. And very few games have been able to do that properly. But like I just think 10 times is too much. It's too slow. It should be like 5.
What's missing?
It's not until ending number 8. I'm looking here in my notes. We call this the parent trap ending, is the note. Yep. I have here. Where it's specifically laid out like, hey, we got to get mom and dad back together.
That
down
should be
the
number
underworld.
3, and they should get back together on 7.
Something like that. But I think you could speed it up. I think you could cut it in half easily. And you could still get the same amount of stuff done. But like I sat down today and I watched through the collection of all the endings, and it's just too dang slow.
Well, you just got out of your big boss fight. You want the moment of after this intense battle, right?
Well, that's great, but I want to learn something new. And half of these endings, these 10 endings, there is very little new information to be gleaned. I think they dispense it way too slow, and there needs to be more development at the end of these runs.
Maybe also some kind of visual signifier that you have three of these special endings left to go before credit
Great
roll.
Point. Yeah. I had to Google, like, well, how many are there? And I thought, and I was like, 10? I like, my eyes popped out of my head. And that sound effect played where in the dialogue, when something dramatic happens, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
the NPCs,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which, that's a great system where they have, like, little sound effects and, like, visual cues, almost like, kind
of
like a...
Oh, yeah, the gasping
like
noise
anime.
Of the gods. Like, that, yeah, that they, sound, I love that when they play.
There are like a half a dozen of those, like those little bits to yeah.
I really
kind
like,
of underline different points. But anyway.
Sorry. I really like when you have the two, you go into the room as the dual one, and you have to pick one, and the other god gets mad, and then you get both of them. That's
not
just
everybody.
That's
likes
a great.
That.
That's a great system.
I like it. Yeah, no, it's awesome. Yeah. It's great. It's outstanding.
Yes, it is getting it's past my dinner time. I'm getting hungry.
Oh my
yeah,
gosh.
I guess maybe last talking point before we jump into rankings, like Hades 2 has come out. We were on the verge of maybe covering it for this episode. I dabbled with it for only, I don't know, like 10 minutes or so, just to be like, yep, okay, this is Hades. Good. I'm here for it. I don't want to be exposed to anything about it until 1.0 happens. So is there like, what do we have as like a, and I know that like the game is already out, so this is kind of a foregone conclusion. Is there anything that we have for like a wish list for Hades 2 that like, gosh, it would be really nice to have this in there, even though that Stygian boat has maybe sailed at this point?
Medic progression needs to be faster. I think the heat system needs to be retooled a bit. And the epilogue needs to be snappier. Don't waste my time game.
Non-linear character stories. I don't want to fuck Thanatos. I want him to be my enemy, and I want him to die. I want to kill Death. You know, like, it's that sort of thing where it's just like,
hot or cold.
What?
You want it to be hot or cold.
Right, exactly. And so I want to be forced into a certain direction with
you
the relationship.
You want to poison him with the thing.
What? Right, and I want
Why
there
are
to
y'all coming after my beautiful boy? What are you guys trying to do?
He's just
Thanatos.
So annoying. He's such a little whiny, angsty. I guess the main character's angsty, too. Great voice characters are acting, you know, I must say across the board, but
I just
stand him.
All right, but you want more flexibility and options.
I want slightly more variety in enemies. I feel like by the 15th time you play through, you're like, okay, I know what's gonna come in each level.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's not very much surprise. Oh, look. It's the lava level again.
Yeah, you're never surprised when you get to the end of Elysium and you're like, oh yeah, this dog shit boss fight again.
Yeah, like
so
it'd be
more
funny
of those
if they were like,
for Andrew.
Like I know that once you beat it more times, you know, oh finally you've unlocked Lerny the whatever, and there's like slight differences in the different boss fights, but not that different. It's pretty much still the same fight. They basically just are like, oh, this time it's gonna shoot more bolts, and this time it's going to shoot fire. Mm. Like those are the same fight. I don't care that one, it's a slightly different color on the head of the bone snake.
Yeah,
it'd be fun if it was like substantially different.
I don't know if this is something that like I've incepted into myself, and I don't think this is a spoiler because I have intentionally been avoiding anything about Hades 2. I would love if in Hades 2 there's like, you know how in like Pokemon Gold Silver, it's like a totally different world, but then you have the option of going back into the Red Blue like world, and you can fight Red from the first game.
Wow.
I feel like
you want to do that?
I feel like
cool.
That would be kind of a cool twist here for Hades 2. Again, sure. I don't know if that's something that like I've seen kind of hints to that. I don't know if that's actually in there. It'd be cool if that was in there. I also think maybe an endless mode could be kind of cool.
Oh,
of like,
oh,
yeah,
constantly building up, getting like super overpowered and like crazily broken, and
like
just seeing
cursed,
how far
the cursed blurst mode in Slice and Dice.
Yeah, a curse mode would be interesting too, where like the difficulty keeps ramping up in different, or like, yeah, like you're picking
like every other one, it's a curse or a boon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And endless or something like that. Yeah. I mean, I guess that's what the heat system kind of is trying to be, but it does, it's more fixed. So,
yeah. But yeah, if nothing else, very excited about Hades 2. How about we jump into some rankings? Two thumbs up, I'm getting. Let's
do it.
In traditional fashion, with lowest score goes first. Andrew, kick us off with rankings for season 3.
I wasn't sure. I mean, I was pretty confident I'd be the lowest, but I didn't know for certain.
And once again, it's okay to like or not like a game. All devs go to heaven, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera.
All right. So when I first heard about Hades, I thought, man, that sounds like a gimmick, a roguelike where you dying is worked into the storyline. I thought, so what? When I first heard about it, I thought, so what? Like, when I'm playing Mario, I'm enjoying Mario. I don't need a storyline reason for why he has multiple lives, for why when I fall off of the mushroom smokestack into oblivion and die, he comes back. Like, I don't need a reason for that. I don't need a cutscene explaining that information. Now, at this point, having actually played the game and having revisited the game, I played it for like 30 hours a year and a half ago, and then played it for another like 12 for this podcast. I still think it's a little gimmicky. I think but it's like, you know, it's like 10% gimmick and like 90% a successful and very impressive narrative and game design. This is one of those games where I think it's overrated. I don't think it's wildly overrated, but I think it's kind of overrated. And in my mind, you know, I think some people have approached calling the game perfect. I'm looking in the direction of Scott. And I think that's a little, whoa, we need to slow it down a little bit, because there's, I think, some pretty clear issues with this game. Some of them I will read to you right now. Nitpicks. The characters and the animations, they are rendered at a different resolution than the background, one that is noticeable enough that they're fuzzy. They're fuzzier than the background. I don't like it. And I compared screenshots of all y'all who you send it to me, and it's the same thing on every one of them. That's annoying. That could be something they could fix in the second one.
Didn't notice it. Just calling
for my
that
second
out.
Nitpick. Well, you need to get your eyes checked, sir. You need to wear your glasses upside down, my good man. Hey, why do only some of the gods blink? What's up with that? Some of their little portraits blink and some of them don't. It's creepy. It's weird. I don't like it. All right. Once again, no Deusa love scene. Coward developers. You don't fight Cerberus to the death. Your childhood dog to the death. Coward developers. And lastly, the Hydra death animation. It stinks. It's non-existent. It sucks. It just zooms in on the Hydra and shows an explosion. You don't get that cool, like of the boss, like, you know, despawning and like being eviscerated and like and into nothingness. But anyway, I digress. This game is pretty darn good. I think on average, most gamers should play it. I am ranking it as my new number. Let me double check. Number 11. Hey, that's not so bad. Because I was just going down my list and I'm thinking, you know, actually, you know what? I'm not going to describe my criteria. This is all very subjective and it's my number 11. Next up, we have
Will.
I was surprised to see when I put down a 9 out of 10 that I was the third lowest ranking here. So, at 9 out of 10, this game is the fourth. It's ranked number 4 out of all the games we played. If I was going to rate it again based on my most recent experience, I'd give it an 8. But my first playthrough, 9 out of 10. I just think that the confluence of the character development, all the mechanics in the meta currencies and everything working together to keep you in that flow state, to keep you at where the difficulty is right where it needs to be. I mean, I'm stealing many of the game mechanics from this game to put into my own game, because I think the way they're doing the character development, the way they have the interaction, the weaving together of these different storylines is beautifully done. And I don't think other games have done that quite as well. I know Stardew Valley does its shit, and like there's a lot of other games that have the character development side of things, but like this game, I think in the context of the Olympian gods, brilliant. There's so much context you get. Just who's Zeus? Everyone knows who the fuck Zeus is. What does he got? He's got lightning bolts. You don't need any, a lot more context. And so you get the benefit of what's Hades? Oh, it's hell. Oh, you have to. There's just so much that's baked into this concept that is just such a beautifully done thing. Don't love bullet hells. So it's never going to get a 10 out of 10 from me, just because that's not my style. If they had a deck builder version of this game, now we're talking 10 out of 10 again. All right. But like, I'm going to have to dock at a point there. I still think it's done very well. And 9 out of 10. Beautiful game. You should all play it.
Colin.
You know, it's a great game. It's a little bit rogue light. It's a bull light hell game, but it's story heavy, and it's one of the few roguelike games that we've played that the both has a story that's important to the game, makes sense to the game, and is fairly good. On a lot of the games, I my system of okay, let's strip out all of the if you strip out all the flavor, would this still be a fun game to play? I think the answer is still yes. But while in many other games that wouldn't matter, this game, it matters a lot because the flavor is so much a part of what the game actually is. And that's rare for roguelike games. So I appreciate that it does that and does it well. Many times on this podcast, we've said, oh, you know, need a little bit more story. And usually I'm kind of not agreeing with that because most of the time when these kinds of games have stories, they're not very good. So I appreciate that it has a good story, and I really like how well the roguelike mechanic is integrated into the story. Like what was it, the robot game where the time traveling one,
Into the Breach,
that does not integrate its time travel mechanic very well. Like, it doesn't make any sense. And then, you know, so some of the other games we play, they just don't even bother trying to have a reason that you're playing it again. It's like, well, you died, try again. Like, it's fun that it's like, oh, it's integrated into the game. So also music's good and the visuals are exquisite. It's a beautiful, beautiful game. I really like the way they use the colors, the like splashes of hot pink and neon green and all that stuff is really cool and a very good visual style. So I'm giving it a 9.3.
All right.
Which puts it at what? My number six game.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll bring us home here. I'm going to put Hades as a 9.5 as my new number one asterisk, tying with a game that basically is its polar opposite, Cogmind, which had been my number one for a long, long time. Because I think they excel in their fields, and their fields are completely opposite under this genre umbrella. So I think for Hades, the first time I played it, I was a little overwhelmed by everything. I think the Greek mythos stuff like jives with me very strongly personally. I know that like this is a game that like won't gel with everyone, because that's okay. Because I think like it has to line up on like the theme, like the gameplay elements, the art direction, all that stuff. But for me personally, it hits all of those notes just astoundingly well. Like, I've played a lot of I think the only other Supergiant game I have not played extensively was Pyre.
You should play Pyre.
I've heard good things about it. But Hades just feels like it's on a totally other level of just production quality, like all of the systems coming together. Like, just feels so good to play. I started with 80 hours before doing this for the podcast, and I was like, how much more like could I be interested by it? And yeah, I'm still interested in it, and I feel like that's really hard to do at that level. I think the bads are the meta progression can be a slog. I don't really feel like if my save file somehow got corrupted or deleted, I don't know that I would start a new save and start all over from the beginning, but maybe that's okay. Cause I think that like, I've already rolled credits on it. I guess I've quote beaten the game. And yeah, I think like the process by which I've gone through, like understanding like the UI elements and like how everything has just kind of come together has just been a very good and special experience, the voice acting, the music, the art, just the way it plays, the way that it plays on the Steam Deck, that I can jump between the Steam Deck and my computer and it feels perfect on both. All of the guns feel interesting and useful. All of the boons feel very interesting and useful for specific reasons. Feels like it's firing on all cylinders. Tied for number one for me. I think that feels appropriate. And I think according to our aggregate rankings overall for the podcast, we have a new number two, unseating previous number one, our FTL, Faster Than Light, episode. I think that one held on to number one for a long time until Slay the Spire kicked it off. So back to backs with dethroning the top with Slay the Spire and Hades. I think well-suited, well-deserved. Very excited for Hades 2 once it finally comes out in 1.0. But before we go, we got to do a little bit of similar gamesing. Andrew, you wanted to us to give people homework assignments for this.
Oh, yeah, right? Yeah. indeed. This might be a little bit, behind baseball. But, I thought, to take the workload off of you, having to do all this research, we could just go around the horn and make recommendations of, like, anything tangentially related. Like, in the same genre or released the same year or, in the same, general, like, setting. Symphony X, The Odyssey, great concept album, progressive metal, check that out. They have a 25-minute song all about The Odyssey. It's sick. That was my general idea, but maybe we'll kind of workshop that and maybe look at doing it next time. Do you have a list of similar?
I do have a list. Yeah.
For Hades.
Yeah. So for Hades, there's one that's like almost a carbon copy. I wouldn't say clone of Hades. But it is, for all intents and purposes, the exact same game, but with Chinese mythology instead of Greek mythology, called Warm Snow, which is quite popular.
I don't know if that's an amazing name, and maybe that's culturally insensitive of me to suggest, but maybe, speaking of workshopping, sorry, you continue.
I also don't know if Warm Snow is an allegory for a radioactive fallout allegory, but anyway, don't eat the warm snow, play it instead. Death Must Die is a Hades like vampire survivors like where lots of, well, you might be interested in this in terms of just like character god progressions after runs, but more in like the survivors like genre. We have Ember Knights, which is a 4-player co-op hack and slash that I think has like a maybe like a boon and upgrade system similar in theory to Hades, less overtly exposition driven. Three that might be more in that realm are Curse of the Dead Gods, Raven's Watch, and Redacted, which Redacted is a game that takes place in the Callisto Protocol universe and is very much wearing Hades gameplay systems on its sleeve. They did use the word bruh unironically in the voiceover, which...
Very cool.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, some other game, Children of Morta, has a very exposition-heavy driven co-op experience. Wizard of Legend 1, not 2, 1, play 1, not 2. Wizard of Legend 2 very much looks like and plays like Hades, has not been getting great reviews, sadly. The recent game released by the developers of Dead Cells called Windblown, very early access, but feels very Hades in its hack and slash approach. And then finally, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Splintered Fate, I believe, is another co-op Hades.
Now there's a clever name.
Hack and slash beat 'em up type game. So give those a check. Right on.
Did I say behind baseball? I meant inside baseball. Let's try it real quick, though. Hey, Colin, Will, y'all got any recommendations for the listeners of games that are even at all related? Any other hack and slashes? Any other games involving Greek mythology that you enjoy?
It's not roguelike and it's not Greek mythology, but Hyper Light Drifter.
Oh, yeah.
Very similar to this game. And there is
similar
a new game out like yesterday
for sure,
like Breaker, which I have not played yet. I haven't really looked at it very much, but it seems like people like it. Maybe
making the jump from 2D to 3D, just like
a
Risk of Rain.
Dangerous move, so we'll see how that plays out for them.
We'll see
But that is the game that I was thinking of the most while playing this, of like, oh, these two combined hit that weird bull light hell.
For sure.
I'm going to keep using that term until it catches on.
Will?
Diablo favorite 3.
Oh, yeah.
Isometric. Mm-hmm. In terms of isometric sort of hack and slash, Diablo 3 was a very good game. Diablo 4, I mean, it's a game, and you can play it if you want, but... Is there a fifth one? I don't even know. I don't have a cell phone, so I don't
believe...
know if they made a new one.
Got him. Good one.
It's called maybe Grim Dawn.
Maybe if we'd been informed we had homework before this, we would have come with better lists.
We're just trying it out. Trying it on for size. Well, you know, we'll see. Oh, throwing things at the wall.
But yeah, I think that's going to wind out our season 3 kickoff episode here of Hades. Send in your thoughts to grogpodzone@gmail.com. We've already gotten some good letters in from our previous Omega Bowl episode. You can see all of our wacky nonsense posting and cat pictures on our Mastodon, grogpod at gamedev.place, and grogpod.zone, your one-stop shop for all that good stuff. With that all out of the way, Colin, you have the duty of picking what our second game of season 2 is going to be.
Well, we're going to continue the theme of exquisite story-driven graphics, beautiful. we're going to shift gears a little bit. We're doing Rift Wizard, which is a pixel art, deep strategy magic, much more close to a traditional roguelike, turn-based, etc. It looks fun. I'm excited to play it.
A good one.
That makes one of us. I mean, yeah.
hunting down Mordred. Well, playing us out and kicking us off for season 3 will be some familiar tunes you're probably used to hearing as you're battling your way out of Tartarus and encountering some bosses who may or may not want to learn any kind of new vocabulary.